Oh, come on. Anyway, let's back to meditation. So where we have some stillness. Where the idea of stillness comes from, the art of disappearing, because once people are still, things start to vanish. Now, I did mention yesterday about going to a Zen monastery where if you nodded, you get hit on the back with a stick, which to me makes no sense at all. But also one thing which I learnt going to a Zen monastery in the north of England was that they asked me to do a different type of meditation where you kept your eyes open and you faced a wall. And it was a whitewashed wall. And I was willing to try anything, because I wasn't just going to just stick to what my tradition or how my teachers taught. I wanted just to see how other people did things. So you sat there, you know, in the morning, just watching this whitewashed wall with your eyes open. Now, because I had already trained in enough meditation to be in the present moment, forget about the past or the future, and to calm my thinking mind, I could actually just watch this wall without, you know, trying to think, without fantasizing, without planning, keeping my mind still, just watching this wall. And then what happened was the wall vanished. It disappeared. It just wasn't there anymore. And for many people, you think they put some drugs in the porridge, or that they had done something very weird. You get scared. What is going on? My eyes are fully opened, and now what I'm seeing is blank. And I had enough courage just to let it be, just to stay there. This was weird, but it was perfectly safe. And then started afterwards contemplating what had happened. And it didn't take long to understand that the nature of the human brain and all of its senses only notices things which change. If there's a hum in the background of the traffic, you will not hear it after a while. It turns off. If there is like an air conditioner or the hum of the fluorescent lights, after a while you don't hear it. The feeling of the saliva in your throat. Now you can feel it. After a while, it will disappear. Because all of the senses only notices things which change. Ambient sound, ambient feelings in the body, you just don't notice. It disappears. Just like on a computer, if you don't click the mouse, if you don't do anything, the screen turns off. And that's what was happening when I was looking at the whitewashed wall. Because I was paying no attention to thoughts, because there were no thoughts going on, I was there in the moment, quiet, just watching this whitewashed wall. It just turned off, the sense of sight. And that was precisely the same as what happens when you close your eyes in the Theravada meditation. You close your eyes, and now I can see the inside of my eyelids. After a few seconds, because nothing happens, the sense of sight turns off. It disappears. And this shows you why stillness, when things are ambient, they don't change, they're even, why that leads to things disappearing. So, how does that relate to meditation? You sit down comfortably, so comfortably that everything is nice and even. You don't have something which is really bothering your five senses, or especially your sense of touch. So after a while, the sense of touch disappears. You can't feel your body. Now that was really important for me in those first years in Thailand. Because we had these terrible, terrible mosquito problems. And I thought that it's something you just had to endure. You know, but afterwards you looked at the Thai monks, and they looked at their exposed skin. They had hardly any mosquito bites. All the Westerners, the white monks, had all the mosquito bites. And first of all, I thought, well, it must be because this was the first time in that part of Thailand they had Western food. They had Thai food so often before. So when they saw a white mark, hey guys, this is Western food. You okay? Yeah. Cool. Sorry? If it's hot, you keep a cool head. If it's cold, keep a warm heart. That way, you're always balanced. But, going back to disappearing, that had all these mosquitoes on you. And I realized afterwards it was because I think the blood vessels of the Western monks are actually much closer to the surface. You know, because of the adapting to the different climates. Which meant, for the mosquitoes, they didn't have to drill so far down to get this rich vein of delicious blood. It wasn't because, you know, it was white food or Western food, and they got fed up with the Thai food. It was, in fact, it was easy to get. So what happened was that we get loads of mosquitoes on us. And that first year at Wat Nanachat, for those of you who ever go back there, it was first called Wat Bar America Wat, because most of the monks were American. So anyway, that when we went there, so many mosquitoes on us, no buildings, snow, camping out in the forest, in the jungles, you know, with the mosquito nets and watching these snakes roll by. Really weird. You know, there, and you were just meditating, and this really dangerous cobra would go past. And then this other dangerous banded crake would go past. I thought it was really weird, because you were just nice and still, you didn't really worry about it. And they didn't worry about you either. You know, we were friends. Anyway, they were all Buddhist snakes in that monastery in those days, so no Buddhist snakes, they were vegetarians, so I was safe. That wasn't my thought. I don't think that was true. But anyway, there we got to being in the forest, and Ajahn Chah would come and do every evening when we first went there, would come between 6 and 8 to actually do some chanting and meditate for a couple of hours. 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. That was mosquito dinner hours. That's when it all came out. And there we were, just sitting there, just, you know, just open slather for these hundreds of mosquitoes. And they knew that when they saw a brown robe and a bald head, they were safe. We couldn't swat them. Many times I thought I would like to, because there was hundreds on me. But then you'd look up at Ajahn Chah, and he was just sitting there perfectly still. I wanted to run away, but he was there. If he had been there, I probably would have run away. But then what happened was, with my friend, we would count how many mosquitoes we had on our arm. A little competition. Stupid young men. Like people actually have a competition of how many chilies they can eat. And it's crazy. Men do things like that. I don't think women do things like that. Men do. Crazy. Mad. But anyway, we got about 70 or 80 on your arm at once. And you can't count anymore. They're too close together. What you can do, you can hear the slurp as the blood is drained from your... That's exaggeration. But it was really hard to endure. So, my trick was, and now thank you mosquitoes for teaching me this, when I was meditating, instead of counting the mosquitoes, I just went inside to be as still as I possibly could. No thinking. No sort of worry, no past, no future, until your body vanished, disappeared. And that was such a wonderful thing, when you could not feel your body, and you went inside watching the breath, and then from watching the breath to inside. And it meant that you didn't feel the mosquito bites, and you had a nice peaceful meditation. Yeah, allowed your body to disappear. Now, interesting thing, just anatomically, but when I came out of meditation afterwards, I hardly had any, like, little welts, little bumps on your skin where the mosquitoes would bite you, because that's what you used to get as a Westerner. And I thought, wow, this is psychic powers, magic. When you go into meditation, it's like you get this force field around you, and the mosquitoes, they try and come in and they just can't penetrate your magic force field. But, you know, it's nice thinking things like that, but the truth of the matter was, it was totally science.
cause and effect. Because later on I read that mosquitoes, they're attracted to the carbon dioxide coming out from your skin, from your pores. The more that you metabolize, the more that you worry, the more that you think, the more carbon dioxide is secreted, and it's like telling all of the mosquitoes, over here guys, this is where I am. But when you calm down, you don't worry, you're reasonably still, even perfectly still, it means hardly any carbon dioxide comes out from the skin. So you become invisible to the mosquitoes. That's what it was. And this day, you may not be able to get into the deep meditations, but at least, if you go into a mosquito-ridden area, the more you worry, the more scared you are, the more anxious you are, the more you metabolize, and more mosquitoes will find you. So just even a little thing, just relax. Just don't worry about things. And then you'll be bitten by less mosquitoes. But for me, anyway, it taught me just how to let the body vanish and disappear. Just by being still, until you weren't cognizant of the body anymore. And that is why we do the Kaya Gata Sati, the mindfulness of the body, the beginning of the meditation. To be able to sort of sit comfortably so the body just has a chance to vanish. So you can sit here and you can't feel your legs. You can't feel your butt. You can't feel your body, your hands. You can't feel your head. And if you have hay fever like me, you can't feel your nose. Stop it, nose. So, what happens is the body vanishes. And you can imagine how peaceful that can be. The smell, taste, and sight is easy to stop. You just close your eyes. Sound, that's a hard one to stop. It's one of the reasons why we ask people to be quiet, to turn off your mobile phones. Because those mobile phones, they either rattle, they vibrate, or they make a sound, and that sound is designed to disturb you, to draw your attention. So when it's very reasonably quiet, it doesn't have to be perfectly quiet. As long as the ambient noise is just even, doesn't change, then soon you won't hear anything. It will disappear. It's not that hard to do if you have something interesting and enjoyable to be able to put your attention on. There was that Malaysian couple over in Perth, and they were watching a movie on the TV, in their sofa, in their lounge room. They never told me what the movie was. I'm sure it wasn't a recording of one of my talks, it was something much more interesting than that. And they were watching there, just wrapped in this movie. And of course, once the movie had finished, that's when they got up, one to go to the toilet, the other one to get a cup of tea. And when they got up, only then they realized their house had been burgled while they were watching the TV. The burglar had been in. And even right behind their sofa, on the sort of the shelves there, many expensive things had been taken by the burglar. The burglar had been right behind them while they were watching the TV. And I told them afterwards, if you could only do that while you were meditating. Why is it you can just let go of sound outside of you when you're watching the TV? Because the TV is interesting and fun. It grabs your attention. Which is one of the reasons why, to be able to get the joy up in the meditation, the delight, the happiness, means you don't have to force the mind, and the mind can actually stay with one thing and everything else can disappear and vanish. And they even say that people playing football, they can get so engrossed in the game that they can break a leg, literally, have a fracture. And they keep on playing, they don't even feel the pain because they're so engrossed in the contest. We have a little itch and totally disturbs our meditation. The reason is because we haven't got the joy and happiness. So, from the very beginning, when we meditate, just allow the body to feel so delightful, and after a while it will vanish. Because nothing is moving. Then we go to the mind, the peaceometer, the past and the future. Just go into the present moment so time can vanish. We're prisoners of time. The present moment is the most wonderful place. You worked so hard to get here. Now you're here. Enjoy it. Your future is made right now. This is the place you are making your future. So forget about what's going to happen next. Make sure you're putting your attention into where your future is being made. Stay in this moment, nice and being here, and then time vanishes. And when time vanishes, you get to this wonderful stage. You don't know how long you're meditating for, who cares? When the bell goes, the bell goes. You're not to say 5 minutes left, 10 minutes left, I don't know how many minutes are left. When I was a young monk, I always thought that these monks who had control of the bell were always, you know, just torturing me. When I had a really good meditation, they'd ring the bell too soon. When I was really struggling, they were never ringing the bell at all. So I wondered how I could get control of the bell. So I decided to have all these ideas when I was meditating, like to get one of these slingshots, or the pea shooter, even better. These little tubes, you put a little pea in it, a dried pea or a piece of stone. And you'd practice in your hut, first of all, till you had very, very good aim. And then when people were meditating, an Ajahn Chah was next to the bell. If I had enough meditation, when Ajahn Chah had his eyes closed, I'd get my pea shooter out. And it'd go, gong. That was my trick. I never did that, but I thought maybe what a wonderful idea that would be. But anyhow, when time vanishes, you don't really care about bells. That is one of the reasons why. If any of you ever come to one of my retreats in Perth, we make sure it's no bell silence. You know what I mean by noble silence? No bells! You know, it's just like going back to school again. We don't trust you. Bring a bell, bong, gong. There's so many bells. Imagine if they had a bell under the Bodhi tree. A mile would ring it. Just before the Buddha was about to get enlightened. Gong. Okay, Buddha. Walking meditation now. Bong. Toilet break. We wouldn't have a Buddha. So anyway, when we learn how to allow the mind to disappear, time to disappear, sorry, first of all. Then, when time disappears, we get to our breathing. Everything else has vanished, and just no breathing left. Former good friend, former abbot, the first spiritual advisor over here in the BSV, Ajahn Chakra, when I first came here, 35 years ago now, came to Australia. Is that right? Yeah, 35 years ago. That first came over to Perth, and this gentleman came up and said, I've imported a sensory deprivation tank, the flotation tanks. He said, would you like to have a try? And I thought, oh yeah, I'd be interested in doing that. You know, because in his flotation tanks, you lay in salt water, which is just about, you know, the same density as your body. So you just float. So you don't have any pressure on any part of your body. And it's just at body temperature. So you never feel cold, you never feel hot. It's just body temperature. You're floating there. It's light, tight, so you can't see anything. It's soundproof, so you can't hear any sounds from outside. They must have a flow of oxygen somehow or other, otherwise you pass out. And it was just a way of just taking away all sensory impingement as much as possible so you can float in there and relax. And we have this tradition in Theravada Buddhism, whoever is the senior has first go. So, Ajahn Chakra had the first go, and he went in there, and I was due to do it the next day. But that morning, our committee members came and they stopped me from going. And the reason was, so that morning was a big advertisement in the local paper. Flotation tanks, as used by senior Buddhist monks. They'd have tricked us, exploited us, you know, and so I couldn't do it. And I thought, no. But anyway, I didn't need to, because I asked that gentleman, what was it like being in the flotation tank? He said, well, it's marvellous. had no bodily pain or aches at all. It was just totally just floating there, really comfortable, better than being in a bed. It was dark, you couldn't see anything, and you couldn't hear any sounds from outside. But he said, what he could hear was his own breathing. I was thankful that he had that experience, because it gave me an opportunity to describe what happens in meditation. Because after your body disappears and it gets really comfortable, the thing which is left is your breath. It's still breathing. And it becomes very prominent when nothing else is there. So once you can start feeling your breath, what happens next is something quite natural in the art of disappearing. You're watching your breathing. First of all, I said, just breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. That's just to give you something to hang on to. But after a while, all those words, just breathing in, breathing out, without saying anything, being nice and peaceful with your breath. But remember, at this point, you're not thinking about anything. You're not planning. You're not doing anything. So you're not expending any energy at all, except in breathing and obviously your heart. So what happens is you start to breathe less and less. You don't need so much oxygen. Because you don't need so much oxygen, the breath gets lighter and smoother. And it comes to play at a time where you can't really distinguish between an in-breath and an out-breath. Same. And because you're very still, you stood, as I said last night at Box Hill, you just start getting some energy. Your mindfulness should become quite refined and strong. You start to see things which other people can't see. When that happens, enough stillness, enough power, when the breath vanishes, it becomes so still, it turns off. That's when the five senses are just about gone. And then we become aware of the sixth sense, which is the mind. And many people experience that as this beautiful light which comes up in the mind. It's not that uncommon that people see these lights, these nimittas. And they understand why it comes. Your five senses, these are, I think I said this yesterday, there's five senses usually really strong. They dominate the sixth sense of mind. When the five senses get subdued, eyes shut, ambient sounds, so you've not really anything to disturb you. The body is getting very peaceful, disappearing. The breath is getting peaceful, disappearing. And then all that energy goes into the mind. The mind becomes dominant, and you become aware of the sixth sense, which is usually seen as a light. Why is it usually seen as a light? People have near-death experiences. When they sort of leave their body, they always go to the light. That should sort of tell people what's happening. And when you're dead, five senses stop. After they stop, then you go to the light. And if you go to ask people, really honest people, sincere people who come back afterwards, when they go into that light, really blissful, you know, some people call it pure love, ecstasy, whatever. And you can see that is almost like a first jhana experience. But just beforehand, it's this beautiful, wonderful light. Very joyful, very happy. This is the art of disappearing. Five senses go, the sixth sense starts to arise. What? That's a nice experience. What's that got to do with insight and understanding? The simile of an emperor. Once there was an emperor, and the emperor was, when appeared in public, was always clothed from head to toe. The emperor had his huge boots, which went up to the thighs, had trousers, which overlapped the top of the boots, went way above the navel, had a jacket, which overlapped the top of the trousers, long sleeves to the wrist, and a high collar, had gloves, which overlapped the jacket sleeves, and lastly a huge helmet which overlapped the top of the jacket. That emperor was totally covered with five pieces of clothing. So no one knew who the emperor was. Whether it was Tony Abbott or, or Mr. Trump or Kim Jong-un, or Rupert Murdoch, or... Who was really in control? Was it a man or a woman? Was it Asian? Was it Caucasian? Or, we're all Asians. Asians and Caucasians. And Australasians. And... old or young, all we knew was this emperor was powerful. So the only way to know what the emperor is to take all the clothes off. When you take all the clothes off, the helmet, the jacket, the gloves, the trousers and the boots, when you see the emperor totally without any coverings, then you can have an understanding of what the emperor is. And of course, in that simile, the five pieces of clothing are the five senses. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and physical touch. And the emperor is your mind. The thing which is the most important thing inside of you. Which makes lots of decisions, which controls so much. So, now, in order to find out what this mind is, we take off those five senses. When they disappear, you've got direct experience of the nature of this mind of yours. And any stupid scientist who said the mind doesn't exist, it's just a byproduct of the brain. If they get into even that part of meditation, they'll find just how stupid that is. That mind is very powerful and exists independent of the five senses. There's many, many examples of the five senses disappearing. One of those examples, I love telling this, it was one of my disciples who's so long ago now that I can tell the name, Greg. He was a meditator over in Perth. Maybe half an hour, 40 minutes at most. Sunday afternoon, nothing on TV. So he decided to meditate. Told his wife, just go in my bedroom to meditate for half an hour. After an hour and a half, he hadn't come out. So his wife went to check on him. When she went to check on him, he was sitting there perfectly still. Too still. She couldn't see his chest go up and down. It looked like he wasn't breathing. She couldn't see any breath come in or go out. So she rang 000 and the ambulance came within 10 minutes and the medics ran into the bedroom. They checked his pulse. No pulse. So they put him straight onto the gurney into the ambulance and rushed him to the hospital. Do, 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 do. As the sirens went, this was a matter of life and death. Do, do. Going through the red light. Do, 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 do. This was really touch and go. He wasn't breathing, no heartbeat discernible. Do, 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 do. Straight into the emergency. Rushed him in. Triage nurse. Straight away. This was emergency. Looked like he was not breathing. They put on the ECG, EEG, both flat lines. Ding, 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 emergency, ding, ding, ding. Apparently, ECGs and EEGs don't do that. But I'm not allowing the truth to stand in the way of a good story. Everything else was true. It's interesting. But it was flatlined. So the doctor on duty, good karma this guy Greg had, because the doctor on duty was an Indian, the son of Indian migrants. And asked, now, what happened? He was meditating. And his parents had told this doctor, their son, that some yogis in India through deep meditation can suspend all their life activities. They're not dead. And interestingly, that the only difference the doctor could discern between a live body and a dead body, the only thing which was a bit strange, was that his body was still warm. And that's exactly what it says in the suttas. For those, when he said that, did you know that that's what the Buddha said? That's how you distinguish between a person in deep meditation and someone who's dead. Check their body. It remains warm. So anyway, put defibrillators on the body. You know, these big electric shocks. Boom, boom, boom. And nothing worked. He didn't actually say for how long he was like that, but after a while, he just decided to come out of his meditation. And he just opened his eyes, and he just went up and said, what am I doing in here? I was in my bedroom. How did I get here? Very good. How did I get here? And of course, as soon as he opened his eyes, bing, bing, all the ECG, EEG working perfectly. And the doctor gave him a thorough examination. Nothing wrong with him, couldn't find any fault at all. So it was a Sunday afternoon, just told him to go home. And he walked home with his wife. He says, a totally pleasant experience. The only downside of the experience was the scolding he got from his wife on the way home. She really gave it to him. Said, don't you ever do that again. I thought you were dead. And then been telling me about the experience. But the important part of that experience, he was totally safe. And in such a deep meditation, these are the jhana states, you can't even feel defibrillators on your body. You can't hear the sound of the sirens. That's why I kept on going, do, 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 do. Couldn't hear anything or feel anything. But totally aware. But of the sixth sense, the mind, deep inside. That's classic art of disappearing. So what we're doing here, we are allowing these five senses to vanish so that we can just see what's happening with this thing we call the mind. It's also very joyful and very healthy. When one of those experiences I had was having typhus fever in Thailand many, many years ago. No one knew what it was. We're not supposed to have typhus fever in that area. The only reason we didn't have it diagnosed properly is because no local had ever got typhus fever there, so it was not supposed to be there. But the Westerners came in. Locals had natural immunity, we didn't. So when we got this fever, they thought it was typhoid. It was pretty much similar symptoms. But after a while they realized this wasn't typhoid, this was scrub typhus. So I remember getting that 3 or 4 weeks. And then, if you ever had a big fever like that, you just feel, ugh. Never had such low energy before. And felt very tired, very exhausted. That was a time when our most compassionate master, Ajahn Chah, he came to my bedside, and I was just so uplifted. Oh, this marvelous master was so busy, he came to visit me. I felt so great until he opened his mouth. And then he said, Brahma Wang, so you're either going to get better or you're going to die. And he turned around and left. His wisdom was unquestionable, but his bedside manner left a lot to be desired. Thank you, Ajahn Chah. But anyway. So anyway, what happened was one afternoon, I just, in the middle of a fever, I thought, oh, this is too much. So I thought, you know, do your meditation. That's what I'm a monk. So you just lay there, and as I meditated, just let all the body go, vanish, disappear. And that was just a wonderful experience. Mostly because of what was happening before. Really aches and pains or a fever, no energy. You can understand. So that when you meditated, go deep inside, things vanished. And then so much joy and bliss. When I came out of meditation, the first thing I noticed was the posture. If ever you've been in the hospital, sick, you know, with a fever, one leg is this way, one leg is that way, the hands all over the place. I wish someone had taken a photograph of me. The great meditation posture, that worked. But it was all over the place. Nothing you'll ever see in any book. But the point was, my body was happy. And it could disappear. That's the whole point of the posture, allowing your body to vanish. And of course afterwards, I wish I would have known about this, but pretty sure that's where the fever disappeared. Because those deep meditations, there's huge amounts of stuff happens. Even recently, this guy in Penang, he came up to thank me. You know why? He said because he had this neurological disorder, genetic, where his blood vessels in his brain were scrambled, he said. I haven't got a clue. He did tell me the name, but I can't remember these long names. So it's all scrambled. He had to have this very painful operation. It's only very rare that anybody has this anyway. And apparently the experts were in Singapore. So he flew down to Singapore, had this expensive, painful operation. And then, okay, but then it scrambled up again. And that was really rare. There's only about 2 cases ever in the world where this thing recurred. He was going to face, he was only a young guy, and his wife was pregnant again. second child. And he said, could I go through this really painful operation again? And he said, well, I've got another kid coming on the way, so I should. So he went to the hospital there, and they gave him the scan, yeah, he needs to be done. And then that night, because he'd heard about me doing all this stuff, he did this really meditation, he had to. So he got into very deep meditation, really blissing out, let go. And when they gave him the scan the next morning, they had to put this frame on his body, they had to actually, you know, screw this frame into his bones. It was very painful, but had to do it. And then they said, we'll give him another scan. And that's when they came back and said, just hold on a few moments, we're having a discussion. And they showed him the scan again and said, your brain is unscrambled. It's okay, we don't need to do the operation. And he came up to me and said, almost certainly, that meditation you taught me, don't know how it worked, but it unscrambled. Weird. Well, that's happened so often. That's one of the reasons why. Only when you really get still, really still, and your body vanishes, that's when it starts to heal itself. When you're out of the way. You control any messing around, doing this, doing that, that's a problem. So, that's the art of disappearing. Not fully onto the end yet, but just seeing how your body vanishes and you get the access to the mind and know what your mind actually is. Direct experience. Okay? Any questions? Okay, let's disappear. I'm going to do just about 10 or 15 minutes of guided, and then I'm going to go for another 40-minute meditation. So sitting here, closing your eyes. People just need to adjust their body or just to go find a seat or need to go to the toilet or something. It does happen. Get your body comfortable. You can't allow your body to disappear if it's not comfortable. Just the body won't go. Just like in bed at night, if you can't find a comfortable position, if you're too hot, too cold, you can't go to sleep. So take time. Mindfulness of your legs. How are your legs? Are you comfortable? You can adjust your legs, be really aware of them. Spend some time caring, being there for your legs. Once your legs have been attended to, up to your butt, are you okay down there? Buttocks? Do you need adjusting? From the buttocks to the back, giving your back a good stretch, loosening it. Finding the best position. You won't find a perfect position, but you can find something which you can maintain awareness of and not need to bother with it because it's comfortable enough. Your hands, lap, or on the knees, wherever your hands can be comfortable. Just check them first of all. Your shoulders. Loosening them like a bunch of strings hold up both hands. Let them go. So everything relaxes. Your neck. You can move your neck back and forth until it's really nicely balanced. If you have a cough, attention to that itchy place in your throat. Just be with it. Comfort it until it's really relaxed. Some of you have not got any irritation there, so you can go up to your face. Muscles around the eyes, the mouth. For me, my itchy nose. Just be with it as long as you need. Being aware, knowing what makes it worse, knowing what makes it less of an irritation. Really go inside of it rather than trying to escape. Just like that simile last night of the anger eating monster. Welcome, monster. Thank you for coming to visit me. Being kind. Non-aggression. Gentleness. Making peace with your irritation. See if that lessens the irritation. Just like with the mosquitoes in Thailand. You made peace with them. Then they disappeared. Once the body's relaxed, you can let it go and look at your peaceometer. How peaceful are you? How much are you fighting? How much are you accepting? Fighting, aggression, comes from ego, sense of self. Makes matters worse. Letting go, making peace. Open the door of your heart. It's part of metta, letting go. A sense of self disappears here. It's just nature doing its thing. And see if you can find some joy, some happiness and delight in peace of mind and rest of body. The effort is forcing your attention onto the object. Developing delight is allowing the object to draw you in to it. To see the beauty in an itchy nose. See the beauty in peace. See the joy in a mind that is free. Don't pay attention to the thoughts. Pay more attention to the experience that the thoughts try unsuccessfully to capture. Just the experience. Just being. No need to describe. And see how peaceful you can become. I'm going to be quiet now for about 20-25 minutes. close to the end of the meditation. Just how do you feel? How relaxed is your body? How peaceful your mind? The joy and the peace. The end of the meditation is an opportunity to learn, to reflect, understand what works and what doesn't work. I will now ring the gong 3 times. So now, usually, we can have a break for 15 minutes, a toilet break, a letting go break. And please keep quiet if you go to the toilet. Even if you don't need to go to the toilet, just have a bit of a stretch. And then I will continue again for a little bit of questions and then the last meditation, a short one before lunch. So it's 9:45, so have a nice little bit of break for 1/4 hour. minutes, and then as you're all eating, I know we're supposed to keep noble silence, but it's only a dream. The reality is when you've got a mouth, you have to open it. Very good. So just one of the questions which people always have is, should I do this, should I do that? Should I watch the breath? Should I change position? Should I? Should I concentrate on my breath, or should I not concentrate on my breath? Something happens, should I let the breath be, or should I just go to somewhere else? Lights come up, should I go to the light, or should I just stay with the breath? And all of that is always distracting thoughts. So instead of having the distracting thoughts, what we do is just whatever's in your mind right now, that's what we stay with. Sometimes people ask, what's the best meditation object? It's whatever's in front of your mind right now. People ask, what's the best time to meditate? The best time to meditate is always now. What's the worst time to meditate? Later. Pretty obvious answers. But the most important thing is that sometimes people say, oh, my mind is wandering off, should I take it back onto the breath? Or take it back here? You know, that's one of the things which I followed many years for early part of my meditation practice. Mind wanders off, bring it back again. Mind wanders off, bring it back again. Mind wanders off, bring it back again. You know what happened? The mind kept wandering off again. Never ending. So you know, sometimes you use not just your belief in what your teachers say, but you question, you investigate, you explore, why does my mind wander off? When I'm sitting here meditating, why can't it just be with the breath, nice and peaceful, nice and calm? Why does it keep thinking about all these things, which are totally unnecessary? It's like I remember the time when I was a layperson, as a school teacher. You come home from school teaching, and you see what's on the TV. In those days, I only had 3 channels. So you'd surf 3 channels. These days, people, I don't know how many channels you've got. 60, 70 channels. You surf the channels. This channel, that channel. And then they say there's nothing on TV. 60 or 70 channels! So they go to the refrigerator. If things are falling out, there's nothing to eat. You can see that this is the same old problem. You're meditating and you're not satisfied, which means you wander off surfing the channels of your memory bank, seeing what's in your fantasy fridge, your worry fridge, to see what you can worry about today. But you don't really need to do that. It's how we escape from this present moment in memories which you can't change anyway, in dreams and fantasies and fears which will never happen. Fantasies where you can control your dreams and think you are going to save the world by standing for President of the United States. Or one of my fantasies once was when I found out that the Pope, the head of the Catholic Church, does not need to be a cardinal. They could elect anyone to be the Pope. You don't even need to be a Catholic or a Christian. So when I heard that, I thought, wow, I'm going to send in my CV. Because legally, you could do that. Legally, the College of Cardinals, they're the ones who elect, they could elect Ajahn Brahm as the next Pope. That'd be a really cool idea. So I thought, what would I do if I was the Pope? Pope Brahm the First. But anyway, we have those dreams and fantasies and having a bit of fun, but it is because we're not enjoying the peace and the stillness that we go off into these other places. When I notice the mind wandering off, bring it back, it wanders off again, bring it back, wanders off again, why? What is my mind running away from? And the answer was really obvious. It was running away from me. My mind and I didn't have a good relationship. I was always trying to improve my mind, change it, making it a better meditator, a more interesting monk, better speaker, better trainer, better whatever. I had this terrible relationship, which was, I never realized at the time, because everyone else was doing this normal. Train yourself. You can do better. You can sit longer. You can be more deep in meditation. You can be more wise. You can invent more jokes. You can be more. And that idea of improvement was always underlined by the sense of not being good enough, the lack of peace and happiness and acceptance of oneself. And so acceptance of this reality of now. And so when you change your attitude, to say, I'm good enough, this is good enough. This is, you know, what I am, this is how I am, this is the reality of this moment. Instead of trying to change it, I let go. Let go of any measurement of this thing which you call your body and mind. Making peace with this moment, being kind, being gentle with this moment. And those are the three what's called right intentions. I like calling them right motivations. The second factor of the Eightfold Path, which I always call the most forgotten factor of the Eightfold Path. The one which underlies just the motivation, where you're coming from when you're practicing. Not trying to attain something, but making peace with things. One of the things which Ajahn Chah kept on saying, but dummy monk that I was, you always hear these teachings, but they just go over your head, because you think, oh no, that doesn't really apply to me. He was always learning just to let go rather than to attain. We meditate not to get places, not to attain things. We don't meditate to become a someone, to get jhanas, to get enlightened, to overcome our problems. That's the wrong attitude. We meditate to let go of things, not to attain things. To disappear, not to make more spiritual achievements, which we can make, write out as certificates to put on the wall alongside our certificate of our degree and our doctor's certificate and all these other certificates which people award you in this world. Learning how to let go of things. If it's trying to attain something, your mind will never be peaceful. There's always another place to go, another place to attain. There's always some more to achieve. That's why that reminded of that great monk, Buddhadasa, who when he was building his hall, like building NBM, Nyingbo Buddhist Monastery, when they said, when is it going to be finished? He said, what's done is finished. So, Nyingbo Buddhist Monastery is finished. What's done is finished. Uh-oh. Another car in the driveway. No, okay. Another car in the driveway. So the BSV is finished. We're done for. So anyway, so when one meditates, the reason why we wander off is because we think there's more to be done, more to be achieved, more to be learned, more to be got rid of, and that's not the way of meditation. The way of meditation is making peace with things, being content, not proud or demanding in nature, being easily satisfied. For those of you that rings the bell, that is part of the English translation of the Metta Sutta. Let them not be proud and conceited, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise will be later reproved. May be contented and easily satisfied. Are you easily satisfied? Or do you want more? If you're easily satisfied, then the more comes to you. Ajahn Chah, one of his first teachings, which also went over the head when I first was there, it was a simile of the mango grove. I thought it was the craziest of similes my mad master could ever devise. He said, more by part, I'll pause for a minute. What's the car number?
IJF2KM or 1JF2KM? 1JF2KM. No, it's a new number, I think. It's a silver Honda or otherwise IJF2ZKM, but that doesn't make sense. So I think 1JFZKM, silver Honda. It's right over the driveway. I've seen the photograph, and the lady has come. She's been very nice about it, but this is the second time it's happened in a couple of days.
Ooh.
So she's not impressed.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if they can hear upstairs. I might go upstairs.
Okay, yes. 1JF2KM. Very good. So... otherwise, we're in trouble. Can we get some wheel clamps for the Buddhist Society of Victoria? Yeah. Silver Honda. Okay. Because it is important for kindness and compassion. Because if this keeps on happening, What occurs is even during the talks, you have to keep on interrupting the talks, which is, just disturbing for everybody. So anyway, back to the what happens when you are meditating. You wander off because you're not content with this moment. You're not making peace with this moment. So your job in meditation is actually to learn. So whatever you're experiencing in meditation, to make peace with it. Be kind to this moment. Be gentle with this moment. And to emphasize that I now go on to that wonderful method of meditation called the Emperor's Three Questions meditation. I think you all know the Emperor's Three Questions. When is the most important time? Who is the most important person? No! Oh, you crikey, you haven't been paying attention, reading my books. Anyone who said, you got to buy a copy of Opening the Door of Your Heart. The most important person is the one right in front of you, whoever that happens to be. Yeah. You're the most important person in the world to me now, young lady. But not anymore, now Priya is, now Frank is. I'll go back to that in a moment. But let's we let that one go, because that's not right in front of us at this moment. That the most important person is the one you're with, and the most important thing to do is to care. Very simple. Not to change somebody. As a doctor, you know that. Not to cure people, but to care for them. And then the cure happens automatically as a result of that. If you care for somebody, they don't run away. So I always remember that with my mind. Whatever it is I'm aware of, it's important because it's happening now. This moment, whatever object is in front of your mind, is the most important meditation object in the whole world. What do you do with it? Should I go back to the breath, get rid of it, develop it? Care for it. Have this beautiful open the door of your heart to whatever you're experiencing right now. So, in your meditation. You may start by watching your body, but the most important thing to do is to care for it. It's right here. Then peaceometer to care for it. You find you'll get very peaceful. Then you may have your breath coming up. You may have an itchy nose if you've got the hay fever like me. You may have an ache or a pain somewhere. Whatever it is, make sure it's the most important thing in the world for you. You may have the sound of the truck outside. You may have the sound of people coughing or moving. If it's happening now, it's important. Don't try and judge it, get rid of it, diminish its importance, demean it. Just if it's happening right now, it's important. And care for it. Because you find the objects of meditation, they're just like the landmarks on the journey. They're not so important as the fact you're going in the right direction. That you are practicing present moment. Whatever's in front of you is important. Be with it and care for it. And that's how you develop. So if you ever have any doubts in the meditation, what should I be doing? That's a wrong question. It's not what you should be doing, but what's right in front of your mind right now. And are you caring for it, or are you trying to get rid of it? If you're trying to get rid of it to achieve something you think is far, far better, you'll never get anywhere in meditation. If you stay in this moment, this is important, whatever you're experiencing right now, you care for it, really care for it, then you find it develops to become really peaceful. You never go on to the next stage of meditation. You always go in. Where you are right now, you go deeper into it. Deeper and deeper into it. You don't move. You go in. So that is the way of meditation, and that's a little segue to Ajahn Chah's simile, which I never understood until much later, when he said his monastery, Wat Bo Pong, was a mango orchard. And then he started saying that all those trees were planted by the Buddha. And they're not really appreciating the metaphor. I thought this was crazy. Because if you plant a mango tree, it doesn't last 2,500 years. And there weren't any mango trees in Wat Bo Pong at the time. And anyway, he said, and in those mango trees planted by the Buddha, the mangoes are ripe, there's thousands of them, and the sweetest, juiciest mangoes you could ever eat. All ripe and ready. But, he said, if you want one of those sweet, juicy fruits, the mangoes, if you climb the tree, you will never reach the mangoes. If you shake the tree, no mangoes will fall. If you throw up a stick to try and hit one of the mangoes to make it fall, it will not fall. These days you say if you get a cherry picker, it will never get high enough to get those mangoes. So there's only one way to get a mango from the trees planted by the Buddha. The sweetest and juiciest mangoes ever. And that is to sit underneath the mango tree, perfectly still. I mean, perfectly still. Not perfectly concentrated, not perfectly mindful, but perfectly still. And then open up your hand, and a mango will fall. Such BS, I thought. I'm being honest with you, I didn't understand that crazy teaching. Have you ever sat under a mango tree or an apple tree? I said, open up your hand. You think it's going to fall? No way. If it does fall, where's it going to fall? On your head, yeah. Your bad karma. My bad karma too. So that's crazy. But then after a while, when you started doing your meditation, you tried to make things happen. Shake the jhana tree. to make insight happen. Come on, what effort? Come on, you can do this. Try and climb up the Bodhi tree to find some wisdom. You find you can't do it. It doesn't work. So instead, you find the insight, understanding. I'm just running away from things. That's why my mind is always restless, always looking for something else, never actually being here. And realize you have more than enough right now. So whatever I'm experiencing right now is important to me. It's the most important meditation object in the whole world. When I was meditating, this really itchy nose which wanted to explode in a sneeze. It was important to me, not my breath. I wasn't trying to avoid it, not trying to get rid of it, not trying to heal it, but to be with it. It was important. And care for it. It's beautiful care. So that's how I was meditating. When you are sick, when you are dying, when you have got no energy at all, that's how I was meditating when I had the typhus fever. Not trying to get rid of it, overcome it, escape from it, but go right into it. It's the most important thing in the world, to be with it. Remember Ajahn Chah telling me how he overcame his malaria fever. He was, let's say the malaria fever, they always had malaria. And one day he was in his hut, I think it was in Wat Pa Pong, having an early days, having malaria fever. And again, after a while, people get fed up. It doesn't work running away, trying to just endure it. Just like, you know, you trying to get some deep meditation. It doesn't work. Bring the mind back, it's just endless. And so after a while, he did try another way. So he was, he went right inside the malaria fever. Right in the middle of it. Always in. Until he said he got to a place right in the middle of this really hot fever, like in the eye of a storm. And he could feel, this was a cool place he described it, really cool, but he could feel just around him was this fire, like a forest fire, like a furnace getting hotter and hotter. But he was right in the middle of it. If he moved, he'd get burnt. Right in the middle, he was safe, cool. Hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter. Incandescent, and then it exploded. And that was the last time he had malaria fever. Do you understand? No, you don't. But it gives you the indication, you go inside of things. Now is the only time you have. Whatever you're experiencing, even the unpleasantness of a malaria fever, you go into it. It's important to you. Really. Investigate. Go inside, feel it. It's deep and deeper. Don't run away. Don't keep bringing the mind back. If it wants to run away, go with it. And be very careful, because you know, sometimes people think I'm a holy monk and they will take these and use them for relics. Keep your hands off. You know, my dentist. My dentist, I don't know, well, no, I trust him, but my dentist over in Perth, there was some time ago, I had a cracked tooth, and he said, got no choice, you have to sort of extract it. So he took the tooth out, and it was no problem at all. But then later on, he made a confession to me. Because usually, if you've got like a tooth, which has been, you throw it away. But he decided to keep it as an investment for his future. Well, look at, you know, I'm not up to the Buddha standard, obviously, but you know, the Buddha's holy tooth relic, oh, that's worth a lot. You know, Sri Lanka, oh, that's the. But you know what happened? He moved his surgery, and in the process of moving the surgery, he lost it, he couldn't find it. So I'm a bit concerned if I go to his surgery again. He said, I think your tooth needs to be taken out. Are you sure? Why? No, he's a good. He's a very good dentist. He doesn't mind me telling that joke. But anyway, that whatever's in front of your mind right now is the most important thing in the world. So don't choose your meditation object. Whatever is there, the choice has already been made. Because if you say you're watching the breath and you think, oh, well, now I should go and watch the nimitta or something, you're just making choices, you're disturbing the whole process. Your job is just to be a passive observer. Whatever's happening right now is all you need to do. The mind wanders off, fine, wander off. Don't do anything. Care for the mind. If my mind wants to wander off, okay, off you go, wander off. If it gets tired, let it fall asleep. If it wants to sneeze, it sneezes. I'm totally with my mind, caring for it. And that means you get so peaceful. And it means that you can meditate any time, any place, no matter what you're experiencing. Even if you're sick, even when you're dying. When you're dying, it's sometimes very hard to watch the breath when you've got no breath. So what do? You're aware of something. It's what you're aware of. That's your object. It's important. Care for it. Now I mention this is one of the problems that comes up in meditation. Sometimes when people are watching the breath, it gets very peaceful, start to disappear, and they can't see the breath anymore. There's no nimitta yet. All that's really happening is you haven't got enough energy, enough oomph. You're doing too much. Usually you're supposed to get the delightful breath first of all. Really just the breath breathing in. Whoa. Breathing out. Oh, this is nice. Breathing in. Oh, yeah, I can take more of this. Breathing out. Wow. Relax. Oh, to the max. Oh, yeah. That's emphasizing a bit over the top, but nevertheless, it gets you some of the idea. The breath is nice. It's lovely. And as I said last night, just whatever you're watching, even the contents of your toilet bowl, wow. This is, I'd say that's gross, but you remember it. So, this is nature. When the mind is still, the mindfulness gets empowered. Whatever you watch is beautiful. So obviously, it should be pretty easy. You're watching your breath, breathing in. It's so delightful, just the breath coming into your body. And breathing out. It's joyful. That's part of Anapanasati. Breathing in, breathing out, experiencing Piti Sukha. This is the joy and the happiness, the energy, the power. And it also means that when that breath vanishes, you've still got the joy, the happiness. Which means your mind is energized enough. When the breath disappears, it's quite easy to watch the beautiful light. You rush too fast, you haven't got the joy yet. It means you can't notice this joyful light, which is called the nimitta. So what happens? People are meditating, they're watching the breath, they get calm, the breath disappears, and nothing there. What should I do? There's something there. You're aware? You're mindful? What are you aware of? Whatever it is you're aware of, that's the only thing you need to notice. So just stay with that darkness, emptiness, nothingness, doesn't matter what it is, stay there. Don't choose. Whatever it is the most important meditation object in the whole world. You've got to learn this. You don't learn it by going on to somewhere else. Stay there. And just be kind to this state of mind you can't really understand because you can't give it a name. Because you can't take notes about it, you can't photograph it, all your usual ways of understanding are taken away. So just be with it. And then, after a little while, it will get very light and bright. When it's ready. So it's not your job to drive the vehicle of meditation. You're the passenger. And don't be a backseat driver, telling your mind what to do, pretending you're not really driving this vehicle of meditation. You just take your hands off the steering wheel, feet off the pedal, let go. Whatever you're experiencing right now is important. Care for it. And that's how we meditate. Okie dokie. So what time we got now? Got any more announcements? Any more cards?
No, but what I would like to say, what a very understanding person I spoke to, the neighbour.
Oh, yeah.
I did have to spend nearly 10 minutes, but yeah, we got there in the end, and she appreciated the fact that we are trying to do something.
Yeah.
But it actually doesn't help when people also say that they're not blocking, where clearly she couldn't get her car out.
Okay, yes, yeah.
And she wants to go out.
Yeah.
So I just don't want to make this a parking session, Arjun, but yeah, we just have to, perhaps if you... I don't know what we can do, because we will go on restrictions if this keeps happening.
Yeah. Remember, be sensitive, be kind. May all sentient beings be happy and well, including our neighbours. So just have a look. If they're upset, there must be a reason for it. So see if you can just be a bit kinder. And anyway, if you do come in a car, park a bit further away. And then you get exercise, which is a wonderful thing to do. There are so many streets. Just not so far away from here is Karma Street. And a bit further down is Nirvana Street. What better place to park your car than in Nirvana Street? It's only a few streets up the road. And then you can actually come and walk from there, and when you walk from there, you know that you're always, after you come to the BSV for a retreat, you're always going to Nirvana after the after the session. So it's true, just down the road is Karma Street, Nirvana Street.
I knew you'd do it much better than me.
No. Anyway, so let's please be kind, otherwise it affects everybody. Okay, so it's 15 minutes before lunch, so let's do a 15 minute meditation. So please park your car, called your body. Bring attention to your body sitting here. And what are you aware of right now? Whatever it is, don't try and get rid of it. Don't try and hold on to it. And let it go. And then wipe it afterwards. It's important. Care for it. Making peace, being kind, being gentle. bring close to the end of this short meditation. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times.
Hello everyone, could you please just remain seated while Jan and I leave the hall. Thank you. And for those of you who weren't here for lunch yesterday, I'll just explain what we're doing today. Today it's not a communal lunch, nor are we offering dana to the Sangha. But people were asked to bring their own lunch, or there are some very nice restaurants just around the corner. And the second shop in is Loafers, which make quite delicious